Hey, this is Craig Dillstrom Media.
This is DJ Kaya.
This is Elliot D'Souza.
Hey, this is Jason D'Souza from Aldona.
Hey, this is Nash Lobo from Aldona.
This is Pascal D'Souza from Kelly.
Hey, this is Rohit D. Almeida.
Hey, this is Roland Mascarenhas.
Hey, guys, this is Ron Montero from Localin.
Hi, this is Roy Fernandez from Donna Paula.
This is Ryan D'Souza from Cuba.
Hey, this is Steffi DeCruz.
Hey, this is Tony Nazareth, and you are listening to...
And you're listening to the GSL Podcast.
And you're listening to the GSL Podcast.
That's right. Welcome back to another episode of the GSL Podcast. My name is Wendell, your host. And today's episode, we have a lot to get to. We have a couple of fan mails that were sent in. We have an injury drop and some injury updates. We have some GSL rumors that have been flying around. And of course, we have our recap of the games from the weekend. And we'll check in with our co-host Keegan, as well as another player profile. So, a lot to get to. Let's jump right into the news. First up, we have an update from the league on the playoff dates. Originally, I had said on the first episode the playoffs would be on the 9th, 16th, and 23rd. However, Everest has clarified that the quarterfinals are scheduled for September 9th. The semifinals are scheduled for September 16th. However, the finals, as usual, will be on a Saturday. That's Saturday, September 29th, usually around 1 o'clock or so. And the league has confirmed they've booked the stadium at Centennial Park. So probably the best finals venue you can get. Tons of seats for the fans. You have an audio system there. And the field itself is high quality. It's turf. I mean, a lot of people argue turf versus grass. But I think those people need to relax because we're not professionals. So I think overall having it at the stadium is a great venue. And I'm happy that the league was able to secure it then. So mark your calendar, September 29th, the GSL Finals. I know a lot of you listeners are from out of town or aren't able to make it to a lot of games, but that is the one game you definitely always want to make it to.
You've got mail. You've got mail. You've got mail. Mail. You've got mail. Mail. You've got mail. Mail. You've got mail.
First up, we have some fan mail from Andrew Fernandez of Aguada. We're going to get into the whole recap of Aguada's game later on in the episode, but one thing he wanted to mention is that me, Dre, and Steve were on fire today. That's Andrew Fernandez, Andre Pinto, and Steven Fernandez. They wanted to make sure that I knew that they were on fire in their game and that in my honor, they've been named the DDS, which stands for Drew, Dre, and Steve, their attacking trio, and is a reference to my dental degree, which is a doctorate of dental surgery. So first of all, love the fan mail and the shout out to my education. However, I do feel like it was a little more challenging, just a little bit more challenging to get my dental degree than it was to score, you know, a few goals in one game against one team one time. I think it's a little bit early to grant yourselves a nickname for a trio. I think we need to pump the brakes a little bit on that. It's getting a little bit out of control already. I received a Photoshop picture from captain of Aguada, Croydon de Mello, which was the trio at Barcelona, former trio, I should say, of Neymar, Messi, and Suarez, and on the faces were Photoshop pictures of Andrew, Steven, and Andre. Definitely gave me a good laugh. Wish that I had some way of showing you the photos on this medium. Maybe I'll post it on the Facebook group or something like that, just so you guys get to look at this beautiful photo that was made. But what do you guys think? Let me know. Should they get the nickname? Should we still talk about the Aguada offense? Or should we only from now on mention the DDS?
You've got mail. You've got mail. You've got mail. Mail. You've got mail. Mail. You've got mail. Mail. You've got mail.
Our next fan mail was anonymous. It did not have a name attached to it, but it was specifically requested to be read in an emotional voice. And I mean, this is the GSL podcast. You know, if it's going to be an emotional voice, there's only one way to do it. Dear Brendan Gomes, I wanted to put an Amber Alert out on the podcast as the GSL misses Brendan and his short shorts. Sincerely, a concerned future in-law. Okay, I'll be the first to admit that was a really weird fan mail, but, you know, we pushed through it and it's over with, so let's put it right behind us. Our next brand new sound drop is used to introduce unfortunate updates on an injury status. This is a sound drop I hope I never have to use again. I would never wish injury upon anyone else, having suffered from multiple setbacks myself. Unfortunately, this one goes out to Aldana player Nicholas Roach, who was unfortunately diagnosed with a shoulder labrum tear on an MRI, and thus means he's likely out for the season and will require surgery on that shoulder. For those of you that don't know, the labrum is kind of a soft tissue envelope around the joint of your shoulder. So if you have a tear in the labrum, it can cause shoulder instability, leading to multiple shoulder dislocations, which unfortunately Nick has suffered from this past year. And we wish him the best of luck and a speedy recovery. And we hope to see you back on the field soon. That's right, we have another brand new sound drop. This one is in honor of all the ridiculous rumors that get sent to me as a host. Usually on big ticket items or shocking revelations, I always try and talk to multiple people, get multiple sources. But sometimes you just get funny messages that aren't worth investigating, and I just don't have time to investigate, as this is just a hobby of mine. But I thought it'd be funny to list some of them and kind of talk about them as we go forward if anyone does send me more ridiculous rumors as the season progresses. Some big disclaimers here, so please pay attention. The first thing is these rumors will remain anonymous, is kind of the fun of it. The second thing is these were sent in to me. These are not just random things that I come up with on my own. I spend enough time on the podcast telling you my thoughts. This is meant to talk about what other people are saying around the league. And finally, remember, these are rumors, not facts. They're meant to be funny. Don't take them so seriously. And obviously take everything I say with a grain of salt. So let's get into some of the rumors that we've had so far, keeping in mind we're only about 3 weeks into the season. The first rumor I heard was that Margo absorbed Mopsa because Margo veterans were retiring in droves, including Dwayne Lobo Perez and Gavin DeMello, leading the veterans into retirement. And that is the reason why Margo no longer had enough people to play. This one was pretty funny to me because I was shocked that two players very involved with the team would leave all of a sudden for no reason, especially Dwayne still being in his prime, as shown by the number of goals he scored. So this one was a kind of funny one and was proven to be incorrect immediately as we played them in the first game and both players were there. Next up, we have Christos Remedios has had season-ending knee surgery and will not feature in the GSL this year. Not only did Cruyff play in the first game, he showed no signs of a knee injury. Next up, we have Donna Paula is folding. They did not. Next up, we have Mopsa is folding. They did. So this just goes to show sometimes the rumors you hear about and the rumors you get sent do come true. So this is one of those that they were correct on. And lastly, we're hearing about some trouble in the Aguada Paradise. Apparently, some members of the team do not find the team competitive enough or the league competitive enough and are refusing to pay their membership dues. This is leading to other members on the team having to cover them and pay more for the registration fee. This is a pretty dicey rumor going around. I would find it, I wouldn't say hard to believe, but I think that would be kind of unfair. But it is a fact that Aguada has subsidized players in the past, especially talented ones that they've wanted to keep around. Personally, I hope all of the Aguada players stay. They're one of the staples of the league, and their team is definitely needed to keep the competition level up. So, to those players who are saying the league's not competitive enough, keep in mind you didn't win last year. So clearly you're doing something wrong and there's some room to grow. All right, that's it for the news. Let's jump into some match recaps. All right, and for the match recaps, we'll bring back our co-host, Keegan Marias. Keegan, how you doing?
I'm good, Wendell. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for asking. So the first match we had was actually on Friday, Aldana versus Bugmalo. And before I get into the match, I want to make a note. This was played at Weston Lions Park. This is a new venue for the GSL this year. I'd never been there before, and it's the first game that was there this season. And I must say, arriving at the field, a couple things everyone should know. The first thing is that the field is massive. It is absolutely gigantic. I'd say it's at least 15 to 20% bigger than the outdoor fields you're normally used to playing on. And the second thing is it's actually a turf field, so it's not grass. So that was something I kind of wish I knew in advance, just because you can bring turf shoes instead of cleats. Keegan, what are your thoughts on turf versus grass? Which one do you prefer and why?
I personally prefer playing on turf, just because the grass fields we play on are not always 100% smooth and always have, you know, chunks of turf missing, which causes uneven bounce, particularly in the penalty area. So for a team like Lothlim that plays a passing game, you know, having a perfectly flat surface makes it a lot easier than sometimes when you can't, you know, control the bounce. So personally, me, I prefer playing on a turf field. I know from a long-term perspective, it's not always good in your ankles and knees, but with our shortened season, I don't think it has too much of a negative impact on the players.
Yeah, I completely agree. Couldn't have said it better myself. Personally as well, I also prefer turf. And it's for the reason you said. I think everyone prefers grass if the grass is maintained and cut. The thing is, when people compare turf to grass, they're usually talking about like professional fields or really nice fields. And on those, it's amazing to play on grass. The ball's flat. It feels softer. It's better on your body, as you said. The issue is because we're playing on, you know, not professional fields. It's not our fault. We're a rec league. There's a lot of, not only like some potholes sometimes, but as you said, if you're missing grass and there's mud underneath, the ball can get stuck. It can cause a weird bounce that can lead to a goal. This has happened many, many times. So it's usually a lot more difficult for people to play on grass, in our league at least. I've always said, if you're playing a really good team, for example, let's say we're playing Lothlim, I'd always rather play on a bad grass field and on a rainy day, because those two factors will make it way harder for a possession-based team to keep control the ball. So I can definitely see where you're coming from then. As we look to this game, we were kind of nervous coming in because we were very short-handed with a lot of our younger players unable to make this game on a Friday night. We only had about one sub to start the match, and Bomalo had 5 to 6 subs. That being said, we were confident with the people that showed up, and it actually showed in the first, I'd say, 25 to 30 minutes. The entire game was spent in Bomalo's half. They were really just trying to kick the ball out to halfway to try and clear the area, but we just kept heading the ball back in, nonstop offensive chances. But as I say, it's pointless having possession if you're not going to capitalize it, and we were unable to score in those first 30 minutes. So it was still 0-0. The game started evening out, and Bogmalo brought on 3 of their stars, and Elton, Cameron, and Calvin, who kind of played in the midfield and were trying to take over the game. Luckily for us, just before halftime, with literally a minute to go, Richard Fernandez, on a beautiful ball from AJ Pacheco, rounded around the keeper and slotted the ball into the net. So good goal for him, and 1-0 for us at half. And at this point, our confidence was up and we were feeling a lot better. So once the second half started, I wouldn't say more of the same. I'd say Bogmalo actually kind of turned up the pressure. I'm not sure what they discussed at halftime, but it definitely worked, as they were dominating a lot more possession, having more chances. And I'd say for, you know, 20, 30 minutes of the second half, it was actually Bogmalo on the uptick. And luckily for us, Calvin and Cameron both missed a couple wide open breakaways. And these are chances that 9 times out of 10, they're going to score. So we needed that little bit of luck to keep it at 1-0. And then around the 65th to 70th minute, a nice give and go in the Aldana midfield, setting up once again Richard Fernandez with the half volley. Semi-scissor kick strike going onto the right side to score and make it 2-0. And at that point, we knew the game was over. We knew we had won. So was a little bit more comfortable after that. Overall, my thoughts on the game were a good victory for us. We needed the first win of the season against Bogmalo. It was a relatively even game. I'd say we dominated possession but didn't make enough chances considering how much possession we had. My question for you is, Bogmalo, you know, looking at them, I barely recognize their team. There's so many new people, to my eyes at least. They're focusing on this core of Elton, Calvin, and Cameron in the middle and on the striker, and they're really relying on them to drive their offense and drive their possession. But I find what's happening is you have this triangle of players in the middle that are so comfortable playing with each other and have great one-touch passes. But then you have this like periphery of everyone else on the team that's not familiar with them and not in sync. And it leads to this kind of disjointed playing style. So I'm having a tough time thinking, what is Bogmalo's identity and what is their goal going forward as far as play style? What do you think they should do?
Well, it'll take a little bit of time to get the rest of the team to the level of Elton, Cam, and Calvin, right? Because they're great players and have been for a while. It's shocking for me to hear that Cam and Calvin missed open chances, because they usually both clinical finishers, but it will take some time and some practices to get the rest of the team involved and get them playing close to the level that the three of them, you know, are used to playing. But if they can get the rest of the team involved and get some contribution from some of the other players, they should be able to string a couple of wins together this season.
And that's what I think it was. I think it's just when they came on, they work so well together that it's natural for them to fall in rhythm and pass to each other. But it really doesn't get the rest of the team involved. And then when the other players got the ball, it seemed like they were shocked to have the ball and they didn't know what to do with it. So I'm really interested to see what their strategy is going to be going forward, because I would contrast them with a team like Aguada, for example. And in seasons past, you know, I'd say the past 2 or 3 years, Aguada had some all-stars right in the middle of the field. You know, your Cryve, Casey, Ian. But all the periphery players, they all seem to be completely in sync. You know, you had people like Danford, other players playing on the wings, Matthew Pace coming in, that just kind of fit into that system. And although all the talent was centered in the middle, you had these periphery guys that really know how to play their role. So how do you communicate that to a peripheral player and say that, you know, our stars are in the middle, but this is your role? Like, do you just give them a few tasks to do, or how do you integrate them into a team where they know they're not the focus of the team?
Yeah, I think it's important to identify what everyone's role is while they're on the field. That's extremely important. But that being said, it takes time. It's not easy. It's not something that happens overnight. Like, even when we went to Lothlim, it took us about 2 to 3 years to fully put it together. It's not as easy as it seems, because like, people don't play with each other as much. So, you know, sometimes you have to figure out in games, because not everyone can make it to practices. So that definitely takes some time to have, you know, everyone's roles identified, and then them being able to execute those roles when it comes to game day.
Yeah, fair point. So that wraps up the Friday game. Moving on to Sunday, the two games were at Eglinton Flats. As I said, the schedule this year kind of jumps around to different fields, different times. But we had two games featured on Sunday. First, let's start off with Lothlim versus Kolva, with Lothlim winning 4-1. Goal scorer for Lothlim was Neil Da Silva with 1, Craig Raj with 2, and Kyle Coelho with 1. So you were unable to attend this game due to a personal commitment, but a great result for Lothlim. On the website, it's listed that Jeremy Pinto scored for Kolva, but my insiders are telling me that that's an error and was actually an absolute screamer by Johnny Van Dreen. So let's break this up into the two teams. First off, I would say the result isn't very surprising. I think Lothlim's going to take care of business in almost all the games this season. It's really going to be up to a few teams to challenge them, I'd say. The other thing I'm going to mention is I'm never going to judge a team by their result against your team. And what I mean by that is, I've said Kolva, you know, they got to tell us, are they pretenders or contenders? This is not a game where I'm going to say, oh, they lost 4-1 to Lothlim. That means, you know, they have no shot. I feel like a lot of teams in the regular season are going to struggle against you guys. Even, you know, our team will have a tough time as well, as we already lost you guys once, 3-0. So from a Kolva point of view, Johnny Van Dreen getting on the board is going to be one of their all-stars, him and his brother, Noah Van Dreen. How does Kolva approach a result like this? What do you just kind of shake it off and move on? Or do you say, hey, we're not competing against the defending champions, we're doing something wrong, we need to reevaluate the situation? How would your approach be?
Firstly, I do want to comment on the goal, because I heard it was an absolute screamer too, and that's coming from our team. I believe it was like, you know, 25, 30 yards out, and he absolutely smashed one off the underside of the bar with his left foot, which is amazing.
Yeah, no, I heard the same thing. I heard it was an absolute like wonder strike. It's too bad we don't have, you know, video or replays or anything like that to show everyone that wasn't there. But just a shout out to Johnny Van Dreen for what sounds to be like an absolute wonder goal.
Absolutely. In terms of approaching the game, I think, you know, with most teams, you always want to go and think about, you know, being in shape defensively and playing solid at the back and even the midfield. So that way, if you're not conceding, you know, particularly early, you can stay in the game longer, and then, you know, maybe off a set piece, try and sneak in a goal, maybe a corner, and try to get at least a draw and get a point as opposed to a loss. Because if you try to play an open game up and down, sometimes that leaves you a little too vulnerable at the back, and then you end up conceding, you know, 3, maybe 4 goals depending on the day.
Yeah, I would agree. My counterpoint to that would be, you know, if you tend to play more defensively or focus on the back, yeah, you can kind of clog up the game and keep the score low and then maybe try and poach it at the end. But then how do you express yourself as a team that wants to play more possession or play more offensively? For example, Kolva, they have some great offensive threats. If they want to develop this talent, if they want to, you know, let these guys loose, how do you balance that with playing conservative? Because a lot of people say, you know, if you park the bus, you play conservative, you'll be closer in games, but then you'll stifle your talent, they won't develop. So how do you balance those two aspects?
Yeah, that's a good point. I guess it depends on how, like, what your team strategy is for the long run. The only reason I like to be conservative initially is that way you keep yourself in the game, because particularly with young teams with a lot of talent, if you go and you play an open game, you can be down like 2-3 nothing inside 30 minutes, and then everyone's completely demoralized, and it becomes almost an impossible task to come back in that game. So just staying in the game longer just, you know, keeps the belief at a higher level that you can sneak in a goal and, you know, sneak in some points, maybe even a win by a full-time whistle.
Yeah, I completely agree. When it still amazes me how much the mental aspect of the game is so important. One goal can completely change things. If it's 1-0 and it becomes 1-1, you're almost certainly going to lose. If it's 1-0 and it becomes 2-0, you just have so much momentum, so much more confidence behind your team. So I completely agree with that, that going down early can really, really demoralize a young team, especially a young team that's, you know, not as sure of themselves because they don't have that championship pedigree. Speaking of championship pedigree, switching to the other side, we have Lodsholm, another comfortable win for them, 4-1. They seem to just take care of these games as if they were routine, but I mean, it's not routine. You still have to go out and beat these teams competitively. From a motivation point of view, what is driving Lodsholm right now? Do you think it's trying to chase that 7 championships of para where Lodsholm is at 5, or do you think it's just, you know, the love of the game and wanting to win? Or is it maybe just, you know, you have so much talent that it doesn't really matter motivation-wise, you're going to get the job done?
It's a combination of different things, right? Like I told you earlier, it took us a while to put it together, but now we've kind of got to the point where, you know, irrespective of who's there, people can fill in different roles, and we can either win comfortably or if we needed grind out a win, that belief is there that no matter who's in the playing 11, we can still, you know, get the 3 points, which is extremely difficult to create initially. But once you have it, you just kind of, it creates momentum and you just take it game by game.
Okay, perfect. So disappointing result for Kolva, but I think they'll bounce back. I don't think they should be too disheartened by losing to Lodsholm. And this brings us to the final game of the weekend. We had Aguada versus Bogmalo. Bogmalo on a back-to-back, so they had to play Friday and Sunday. This is going to happen with some teams. I know we have it, I think, the first week of July. I'm hoping all the teams will have to go through this or something like that, or maybe they came up with a way that only certain teams have to do it. But very tough to bounce back from a Friday game and then play again on Sunday. However, I'm getting a lot of reports on this game from my insiders. So Aguada actually started the game with only 8 players for the first 15 minutes. By halftime, they had 10 players. They were missing key players like Cruyff, Matthew, Casey, Ian, and Lester. Luckily, they went up 2 goals at the half with goals by Andre Pinto and Andrew Fernandez. And then they started the second half again with 10 players. So they're playing the whole game pretty much short. At least one player, but they went up 4-0 anyways. Goals by Steven Fernandez and Andre Pinto again. Then Bogmalo struck back. They scored 2 by Conan Fernandez and Gaurav Bhatt to make it 4-2. And at that point, I think Bogmalo thought, you know, they're fighting back. They have all the momentum. But then Andrew Fernandez scored again to make it 5-2. So that was the final score. According to my insider, the standout player of the game was Andre Pinto. You know, Aguada, the rumors are Aguada likes to call him the Beast, which is kind of a weird but interesting nickname to give a fellow player. He was playing short, but he was always kept on the attack while defending. And Andrew D'Souza and Net made some good saves as well. From a Aguada point of view, they felt like, you know, they were really battling the odds. It was just 8 people against Bogmalo, who had 5 or 6 subs. And their first 2 goals came with 9 players. So this is the team that actually sent me a Photoshop picture of Andrew Fernandez, Andre Pinto, and Steven Fernandez as a trio for Neymar, Messi, and Suarez. They photoshopped their faces, and they want to be known as the new attacking trio. I said that's a little bit aggressive. It's only been 1 game. They need to reproduce this for a number of games, but they're very, very happy with this result, winning 5-2 overall. From a Bogmalo point of view, I think they're really going to kick themselves with this result. They want to bounce back from Friday's game. And if you're playing Aguada and they're short on players, like, let alone they're missing some of their star players, but if they're literally short on players playing down men, you really have to capitalize and take advantage. So a very disappointing result for Bogmalo. Are you surprised that Aguada could win with only 8 players to start? Or do you think that they just have the talent there and this is something that they're going to be doing throughout the regular season?
That is a pretty impressive result when you're short players. But I got to ask, Wendell, why are you so against the nickname Beast?
It's just weird. Like, I don't know, calling another man Beast, First of all, I've never heard any of them say that to him in any game that he's played. I mean, maybe this is a new nickname, so maybe this is like what they're calling him now, but I just find it weird to say Beast, like, pass me the ball. I don't know. I just find it a weird nickname.
Honestly, if he's earned it, I'm okay with it. I think this league could use some more nicknames with people in the league. I think we should come up with some new nicknames for some players.
It's not a bad idea. I mean, so the other one that I talked about earlier in the podcast to share with you is they also want to call themselves DDS. So that's Dre, Drew, and Steven. And they're referencing my dental degree because it's a doctorate of dental surgery. So they're saying they're calling themselves DDS in honor of me, which I thought was pretty hilarious. But
absolutely, yeah. Go with it, man.
Yeah, I'm rolling with it, but I was telling them, we've never heard of this trio before ever. Like, Neymar, Messi, and Suarez, they got big shoes to fill if they want to compare themselves to that.
Yeah, I don't think this league has had too many, three strikers up top combinations, so maybe we need one or two right now.
Honestly, that's a good point. The league is very starved for, like, true offensive strikers or true goal scorers, so to find two or three on the same team is an absolute rarity. I agree. It's mostly known for kind of dominate midfield pairs or defensive pairs is like a really big thing in the league. You have a lot of good defensive pairings. But as I was saying, for Aguada, you know, winning with only eight players, you never know what to expect of them. Who's going to show up? Is this something you think you would expect from them to win with so few players, or is this just par for the course when it comes to their team now?
No, I wouldn't have expected that, particularly eight players, 10 maybe, but playing three, like two less outfield players makes a big difference over, 80 minutes or 85 minutes, however long our games are. I wouldn't have, like, pulling off a tie maybe, but to win 5-2 when you're down two players for a big chunk of the game, that is very impressive. So maybe he's earned the nickname Beast based on this game.
Yeah, that's true. That's a very good point. From a Bogmala point of view, we already kind of covered their team, so we won't go into depth here. But, losing 5-2, a very disappointing result for them. And I consider it definitely some points dropped. And when you're fighting at the bottom of the table, you really need to grab onto any points you can get and take advantage of a team that's shorthanded. But one last thing I wanted to mention before we go over to the player profile is Aguada actually has a game tonight versus Margao. This is on Tuesday. And at Eglinton Flats, 9 p.m. This is one of those weekday games. It's hard to say with Aguada because you don't know who's going to show up, but this is a really, really interesting early kind of matchup between two teams that are going to be battling for those upper tier spots in the league. How do you see this one faring between Aguada and Marga? What would be your prediction?
I think it's going to be a good test for Marga to kind of see where they're at this point in the season, because right now they're in second place with a win and a tie. If they can get a win against Aguada, irrespective of who shows up, it'll be a good boost for the season and propel them towards the top of the league. If they lose, it'll kind of push them down a little bit, and then they'll be stuck in the middle, which is someplace that they're trying to avoid. And, they want to finish either first or second, like how they have in the past couple of years. But it'll be a good test for them to see where they're at this point in the season.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is a statement game for Margao. I really feel like they're going to come out hungry. I think they're going to win tonight, and I think they're really going to try and, mark their name that they've absorbed Mopsa. They have a stacked lineup. They're back in the league. They're here to win. And I think Aguada is going to have a tough time tonight, especially if they're short players again. Okay, that concludes our match recap. Now we'll jump into the player profile segment. So, Keegan, who do you have for us today?
But they are who we thought they were, and we let them off the hook.
This week I have another defender in a similar theme to last week. His name is Miles Abreu. I hope I'm pronouncing his last name correctly. I first saw him as a young defender playing for Margao in an indoor tournament. And this is when he was maybe like, 17, 18. And he absolutely blew me away. The way he read his maturity at his age, the way he read the offense playing against him. He was so calm and confident on the ball. At such a young age, he impressed me. The last couple of years, he's bulked up and really, put on a lot of muscle. He still continues to have great skill on the ball. And there are times now when they even put him up top to play a striker when in need of goals. So he contributes for them in a variety of ways.
Yeah, I share a similar kind of story with Miles. I think that was a great find by you. He really came on the scene when he was a young star, and he was known as a very cerebral player, great mind for the game, very intelligent player, but he was kind of skinny, lanky. He grew up, he's a lot taller now, but once again, he was still on the skinnier side, and that was kind of hampering his game. But as you said, he's gained a lot of muscles, kind of similar to last week where we talked about Josh and how he needed to bulk up a little bit to really get into the physicality of the game. Miles has done a similar thing. And one thing I want to mention that you touched on is that not only can he play in the defense, he's also playing striker. And I want to mention a point that a lot of people don't think of is everyone thinks that you need to be really physical and really tough when you're on defense. But actually, when you play striker, you need to be just as tough. And it's kind of obvious because you're playing against those central defenders. So you're the one battling them. But the other issue is that if you're going to be a strong center forward holding up the ball, you receive the ball, you have defenders behind you. It's very difficult to play that way. They're going to be coming from behind. So you need to have a lot of upper body strength to shield the ball, hold possession, and wait for your team to catch up to you. So it's not just central defenders that have to be really strong. It's actually strikers as well.
Absolutely.
So, Miles, that's your shout-out for this week. Look forward to seeing you develop more and more. I think you're very key. I think we both agree, actually, that he's a very key player for Margao this season. And as he's on the younger side, he's going to grow and develop with the team as they go through kind of a renaissance of where they want to be right now. So, great player profile. Thanks again, Keegan, for all your hard work.
Take care.
And that concludes another episode of the GSL Podcast. Hope you enjoyed this episode. Please continue to write in with your fan mail, inside information, any rumors you have, or maybe give a shout out to a player that you think deserves a player profile. You can write in at thegslpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks again for listening, and tune in next week for a brand new episode.